I'm gonna, no. Congratulations to all the celebrants. You know, I was listening to Paul, and I really, you know, it touched my heart. You know, we can hear the heart, can't we? You know, well, you can hear it if you've undergone this transformation, if you've taken the ride from being cerebral to being heart and soul inspired. That only comes through divine, supernatural transformation. And believe it or not, we can do exercises and things and incorporate new methods of behavior and new things into our life, new understandings, new truths, new philosophies, and actually undergo what they've written down in this book, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and come out with something supernatural. Something that when we get to the other side, we say, how did that happen? How did I go from being a dead man walking or dead woman walking into a person that lives life in an abundant manner, that can lose a child, that can lose a significant other, go through tremendous calamity and pain as the lady that picked up her medallion was talking about, and stay sober and still inspire others to become the best they can be. That you can get through this stuff without medicating. How does somebody do that that came in wanting to die? That came in with everybody giving up, you know, looking at us like, I don't want them around. I don't want to be associated with them. I don't want them in my circle of influence. You know what I mean? We go through that. We annihilate everything worthwhile in life. You know, the book has that statement in there for a reason. You know, when we go through all that trauma and all that tragedy that we find we authored most of, it's mind-boggling to see us come out on the other side, being able to have a certain perspective about life, a certain indwelling of this spirit they talk about, this fourth dimension of existence, this sixth sense that enables us to be spiritually liberated from the things of this world, where we can face anything on earth and stay sober and still live to good measure. It's mind-boggling. Keith and I talk about it all the time. It's like, man, to be able to live two lifetimes within one life period is amazing. It's just, it's amazing, but it comes with a price. You know, we can't come in here and remain the same and acquire that. We can't come in here and remain the same and stay the same individual and possess the same thinking, same philosophy of life that we walked in the door with and get a spiritual awakening with that. It doesn't happen. You know, it's like we have to come to an understanding of what was killing us, of what was creating all the tragedy and all the disappointment and all the regret and all the shame and all the fear and all the, you know, the degradation, that bitter morass of self-pity they talk about, that place that we go to, that loneliness, that bone-crushing loneliness that we all know. Everybody in here knows if you're a real alcoholic. To a level of life we could never imagine. We go to a life unimaginable. See, when we get here, we can only imagine a life. But when we go through this process, we possess something that we never could have imagined, given the state of mind that we were in. So we have to identify what's broken, don't we? I mean, we got to really figure out what's broken, because Silkworth said very early on that unless one is willing to undergo an entire psychic change. Now, you can consider psychic as being that place within our mind that emanates thought, which comes from our old attitudes, ideas, and beliefs about life, things that we were taught, our filters, right? It can come from, it can also consist of our body and our soul. I mean, it's like this psyche, it's like this under this whole philosophy and understanding and perception of life as we see it. And he says, unless one's willing to undergo an entire change of this thing, there's very little hope of your recovery. Now, there's many in here that have struggled for years. Ron talked about 8 years to get to. Took me 16 years to get anything. We all have our stories, but we all have our pain. We all have our. We all can remember who we had become. We become something. We become somebody. With a perception, philosophy, and understanding about life that we believed, and if you're anything like me, was unchangeable. See, I thought I was life sentenced to thinking about life the way I thought about life. I thought I was going to pay for my sins for the rest of my life. That what I was experiencing in the physical pain, the emotional pain, and the mental pain was a result of what I had done. What I thought. The way I thought it was, though, wasn't really the way it was. And I only found that out by undergoing a series of exercises laid out in 12-step form that had me come to a completely understanding of what truth was. What was the truth? See, I was going around life pretending that the truth wasn't real. I had done all these things and lived this life and held things as super important that I absolutely believe was the truth. And I pretended that the bad things were not real. I just pretended and carried myself through life as like I was pretending not to know stuff. So we get to this place, we take this inventory, we identify where our natural desires have warped us. Through our resentments with other people, places, institutions, principles. You know, we look at this stuff. We look at it, we do surgery, we investigate. What is it about me that feels threatened or hurt by other people? What is it that I fear, and why do I have these fears? What about the harms that I've committed that I feel I'll never be forgiven for? And we look at these things, right? And we see that central to all of those things are my desires, my God-given instincts, these things that drive me, these things that I'm constantly pursuing, the things that are always on my mind, my central facts, so to speak, the things that dominate me, right? And we look at these things and we see, you know, we find out, you know, it says in step six that, I probably need a new one. It says, this is a step that separates the men from the boys. Now, mind you, we've already uncovered all the things that these shortcomings, these defects of character, we've identified how inconsideration, being an inconsiderate human being, being a selfish, self-centered human being, being a liar, dishonest, being fearful of everything, scared that I'm not going to get what I want, scared that I'm going to lose something I got, how all that like filtered out into these other things called the seven deadly sins, this greed and this lust and pride and ego and sloth and gluttony and you know those things, right? And I see that who I became must change. They talk about this entire psychic change thing, right? Well, how do I change that stuff? How do I go to a level of living that brings me to be a different human being? Well, the first thing that's necessary is I have somebody that I desire to emulate that has certain things in their life that I want to possess. I need a coach. I need a guide. I need a sponsor. Okay? They're going to get me there. They're going to take me down this road path and be able to help me understand what it is I need to seek. Because all the things that I'm doing in this 12-step prescription are having me become of maximum service to God and to my fellow man. They're having me come to a place where I can experience this vast change in feeling and outlook. See, if I stay the same, how am I going to get a vast change in feeling and outlook? How am I going to get a profound alteration in my reaction to life? It can't happen, given who I was. I know what I got. So I must change. This whole thing is about change. So I need a coach and I need a guide. I need to understand what I'm seeking. I need to understand that who I've become must be replaced by who I want to be. Obviously, if I'm a habitual liar, I need to start telling the truth. Now, I'm going to tell you, if I continue to possess the same circle of influence, the same people that I've surrounded myself before I got here, after I got here, there's not going to be anybody that's going to hold me to account to become that person that I'm talking about, because I usually gravitate to people that are just like me, that do the things just like I did, that talk the same way, that use the same language, that harbor the same the possessive thoughts and selfish thoughts and, you know, perhaps unworthy desires, right? I'm going to hang with those people. I fit right in. I need to change my circle of influence. And let me tell you something. Just because we get undrunk and undrugged doesn't mean I can't find the same people that I used to hang with in here. So, what am I going to do? You know, we talk about people that struggle in this program for years and ever and like forever. I met a guy this morning that was so broken and so beaten that he really was, he looked like he was going to die. He just gotten out of the hospital this morning, took a taxi over to my house. I drive up and he's there in the parking lot. Fractured. Falling apart. At the end, no hope. It was like almost lifeless. And I said, "Where are you going to go?" He says, "Well, I'm going to go get a hotel room. You know, I don't know what else to do." It's at the end. You know what I mean? He could be dead now. He could be dead right now. I don't know. I'm going to find out tomorrow. Why do we suffer? Why do we struggle? Why do we come in here and remain the same? See, if you work this deal, you can't stay the same. It's impossible. Up until the end of step five, I mean, we get done with step five, all we've gotten is a clear picture of who we were. There have been some drastic improvements on the things that we used to commit that got us immediate consequences, perhaps incarceration. Perhaps alienation from our family. Perhaps some other things that might have, you know, physical consequences. But we really haven't done much changing, have we? I mean, we found out if we were a real alcoholic or not. You can't stop and you can't stop starting. You got a death sentence. We need to seek a power greater than ourselves. That's what AA says. We go, yeah, because everything else I've tried ain't working. What have I got to lose? And then we make a decision to seek. And we read it all the time and we chime in like a chorus line that he's come to all who have earnestly sought. Earnestly sought. Well, what does that mean? It's a question we all have to ask ourselves. What am I earnestly seeking? Well, I can't make up how to earnestly seek because I don't know. I don't know how to get there. The way they wrote this thing that they say, he's come to all who have earnestly sought. See, and then we say a third step prayer and we decide, and then we do something. We validate the decision. We do the investigation. We uncover what the deal is. We uncover who people got when we showed up. We see what needs to be changed. We got a good idea of how our incessant demands and entitlement and willful desire has gotten us all the carnage and catastrophe that we could ever imagine. And we're also able to see the collateral damage, the destruction that we've done to everybody. Kids getting taken by DCF, incarceration, loss of freedom, hospitalization, loss of health, loss of family, loss of friends, loss of everything. Everything worthwhile in life. We talk to somebody about it and we get a very clear picture, don't we? And then they say that we must change that. That's what 6 and 7 are all about. So if you read those two short paragraphs and you think all is going to be rosy and expect something for nothing and not have to participate, you're crazy. Like I did 6 and 7, I'm done. Poof, I'm amazing. I'm an angel now. I'm a reformed thief. I'm completely honorable. I have integrity now. What? Or the worst thing that I've heard is, I'm so humble now. Right? Oh, God. What are you trying to sell me, man? Steer clear of those people. They're drinking that magic elixir. I don't know. It may not get you drunk, but it sure gets you whacked out in the head. People that have said it before going, oh, my God. Really? Really? So, but we got to change, right? We don't know how. So, like, there's some things, you know, it says that he says, this is step that separates a man from the boys. This is step 6. This is having the attitude to want to change that which we uncovered. It's the attitude of the willingness to want that individual to die, to not exist anymore, so that I can become who God created me. So I can go through this refining process, like we talked about last week, the silver thing. You know, when the silversmith's refining silver, got it in a big melting pot, and it's boiling over, and all the crud, all the impurities are coming to the top. And every so often, he'll go in there, and he'll scrape it off. You know what I mean? He'll scrape off the impurities, he'll scrape off the crud. And then all of a sudden, when he goes in, and it's pure silver, he sees his reflection in the silver. That's how he knows it's pure. God's doing the same thing with us. But we got to engage. We've got a desire to become different. If you don't, you won't. You don't want to change, you won't. It's just that simple. If you don't want to become the best you can be, you will remain who you've been. You'll probably sell out for mediocrity. Mediocrity is okay. Settle for the status quo. Hide in the herd. And not become who God created you to be. You won't become the magnificent creation that the author intended. Right? And he says this. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty, two ingredients that are essential, to try repeatedly step 6, to have this attitude of willingness to change and be rid of the things in myself that I had become, without any reservations whatever, has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to become a man or woman sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. This takes time. And the only thing that will motivate us to change that which is objectionable, that which stands in the way of my usefulness to God and to my fellow man, the only thing that will propel me to want to change that is pain. You know what I mean? Like, it's pain. It's when I get alone with myself, when nobody else is around, and I was trying to be hip, slick, and cool, or Mr. Popular, Mr. Social Butterfly, or like I would come in here and they'd say, listen, turn your cell phone off, please. I don't care if you disrespect me. I got space for that today. But it's the people sitting next to you. That's a problem. That's when it goes selfish, self-centered. I don't give a damn what anybody tells me to do. I'm going to do what I want to do. There's people in here right now doing that. You know what I mean? It's like, really? What do you want? I want to become an honorable man. Somebody just turned the phone off? Nice. Listen, we are a defiant people. We are defiant. We're disobedient. We're selfish and self-centered to the extreme. It says we must be rid of this selfishness or it kills us. You can stay the same and die very, very lonely. What's your choice? Or you can stay the same and not die, but still be lonely where nobody wants to be around you. You may be the most miserable, undrunk human being in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've said it before. You can come in here, have a desire to stop drinking, and relapse 364 days a year. And we'll say, come on back. But if you want to recover from a hopeless condition, mind and body, there are very clear-cut directions. And tonight we're talking about the attitude to change, the attitude to become better, to distance ourselves from who we became, and then asking God to help us in that pursuit. So a couple of things I just want to read to you. I don't pretend to know stuff. I just don't. Because I'm very ignorant. You know what I mean? I found that out when I got here. When John took me by the hand, he started explaining things to me. It's like all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I heard truth. I started to get a sense of what morality was. And see, there's people in here to where that's a toxic, disgusting, very bitter word. Because we would rather not even look at it, address it, or think about it because we do immoral stuff. Right? When I talk about sin, or anybody talks about sin, we label it, oh, you're going religion. Really? No, it's probably because you live in sin and you don't even want it to exist. So we make it, we pretend it's not real. You follow me? It's just what we do. It's an internal mechanism to justify and rationalize the very opposite of what we don't want to talk about. This is what this deal's about here. So let's look at a few things. What is an ethic? What is being ethical? I don't know. A system of moral standards. Now listen, remember, who were you when you got here? Did you have no moral standards? Did you not live by truth? Were you not honest or not honorable? Listen, I'm not an angel. I go through the struggle every day, but I beg God to make me a better man. At least I have the desire, as many in here do, to become better. Because I don't like the pain. I don't like to suffer under the weight of my own thoughts and behavior. But who were we when we got here, right? So did I have this? Did I have a system of moral standards? Remember, made a searching and fearless, a fact-finding and fact-facing inventory, moral inventory. Remember, they talk about this stuff in here. I'm not like trying to inject morality into AA. They put it in there. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. Moral is simply another word for truth. Truthful, right? Has to come from somewhere. It comes from the big book. I mean, we have to have a standard. Somebody had to talk about it, put up a set of things. And it's basically so that we can live at peace amongst ourselves and in society and stand for one another and care. There's nothing like the human spirit. Loving one another. What are we doing here? We love people back to health. We love people back to health. We love them because we see us in them. That's a moral principle. That's a truthful thing. It's a thing that will give you self-esteem and self-worth rather than make you feel like a dirtbag. Right? Says, system of moral standards. Ethical is having to do with ethics or conforming to moral standards, conforming to professional standards of conduct. So we're talking about conduct here. How am I conducting my life? Who are the people I'm surrounding myself with? Do they have that thing going on? Are they moving in that direction, right? Then we have moral, since we're talking about morals here, right? It says moral, dealing with or capable of distinguishing. Now think about this prior to getting here and about what you're doing now. right? When we're talking about 6 and 7. Dealing with or capable of distinguishing between right and wrong. See, I don't believe in the left-right world, Democrat, Republican. I don't believe in Christian. You know, there's all different segments of society. This is talking about right and wrong. This is right and wrong. It says, or teaching or in accordance with the principles of right and wrong, good in conduct or character. This will make some of you mad. Sexually virtuous. Involving sympathy without action. Oh, wow. Principles or standards with respect to right and wrong in conduct. Are we seeking that? I don't know. I don't know. You got to ask yourself that, right? Probably a good thing to ask. And we have principle. What's a principle? I mean, there was a time when the only thing I knew about principle was the principle of my grade school, my high school. It was it. You know what I mean? Principle? That's a principle. It's all I knew. Principal person or thing, the head of a school, the amount of loan, which interest, first in importance, fundamental truth, a law upon which others are based, a rule of conduct, adherence to such rules, integrity. They say a constitution, you know, I used to think that was a document in Washington. I never thought it was anything else than the thing in Washington, right? Our country thing, you know, that thing. They say a constitution is a set of rules or principles by which a man or woman govern their life. That's the only definition that they give in Webster's, at least the one I got. A set of rules or principles by which a man or woman govern their life. Well, I know what I was doing when I got here. My constitution was not working. I wanted to die. I hated life. I was constitutionally incapable of being honest. Yeah, of course. I was a habitual liar. I thought everybody lied. I thought everybody was in fairyland, fairy tale land, right? Pretending, masquerading. I thought that was the way of the world. It's certainly who I surrounded myself with. But I found out it was just a bunch of lies. It was just like, it wasn't getting me anywhere. Right? So we have these things. And then we get to this step 7 thing. It talks about humility. Listen to this. It says, indeed, the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of which each of AA's 12 steps is foundation principle. For without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. That's rather important for people like us. But listen to this. It says, nearly all AAs have found, too, that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required just for sobriety, they still have much chance of becoming truly happy. What do you want? I mean, they're begging that question, aren't they? What do I want? What do I desire out of life right now? Says many people haven't even a nodding acquaintance of what humility is all about. There they go, talking about me again. A sincere desire to seek and do God's will is the essence of humility. A clear recognition of who and what we really are, step 4 and 5, followed by a sincere attempt to become who we can be, 6 through 12 actually. Says, talk about these desires, these strivings, these things that dominate our life. For thousands of years, we've been demanding more than our fair share of security, prestige, and romance. Sound familiar? There are people that are undrunk that are still seeking all that stuff. When we seem to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we're frustrated in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. There's people sitting in this room in an AA that are still dominated by those things that are the central fact of their lives. They're saying that if you do this thing thoroughly, the central fact of your life will be the absolute certainty that God has entered into your heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. That He's commenced to accomplish those things for you which you could have never accomplished for yourself. Knowing that. Knowing He's doing for you what you could not do for you for yourself is the essence of humility. It's absolutely knowing that without Him, I'm nothing. Without Him, I can't do anything. Without Him, I can't become the man that I want to become. Without Him, there's no sense in me living. But with Him, all things are possible. See, I know that. I know it in my heart. It lives for me. It's just, it's absolute. There's not, it is a central fact, right? But it came with a cost. It meant that the guy I became had to die. And die, I did. And die, I have to do every day. I have to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to His care. How do I do that? I take inventory. I talk to somebody about it. I commit to change, and I ask Him for help, 6 and 7. And I make amends where necessary. We're going to be talking about that. It says, in all these strivings, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap have been lack of humility. Lack of seeking His power to overcome. Lack of seeking His power to change. To be different. To think different. To act different. It says, we had lacked a perspective to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first. Spiritual values, that word again, value, morals, principles, ethics, right? And that material satisfactions were not the purpose for living. Quite characteristically, we had gone out all out in confusing the ends with the means. Instead of regarding satisfaction of our material desires as the means by which we could live and function as human beings, to be okay with what we have and be satisfied, we had taken these satisfactions to be the final end and aim of life. Are they today for you? It's a question you've got to ask. It says, for just so long as we were convinced that we could live life exclusively by our own individual strength, where there was no humility, no recognition of the power, by our own individual strength and intelligence, for just that long as a working faith in a higher power, impossible. We could have moral, philosophical, and religious convictions galore and remain barren of the power. So this is the biggest game in our life, right? It's like huge. It's life and death, happiness or misery, you know? If you're engaged in this thing, you'll be able to see the fruits of your labor and feel the fruits of your labor. And you will actually create a gateway and know that God is present in your life. Next week we'll talk about true freedom. Thanks.